5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, I'm Bunny Guinness, and this is my podcast, Bunny in the Garden, with someone special. Someone who is well known for something other than their green fingers, but who is also a mustard-keen gardener. I'll discover them through their garden, why, how, and when they garden, the best tips they've learnt, and their gardening style and approach. Today, I'm in the garden with Mary Berry. I'm a big fan of Mary. She's one of the best-known British cooks. She's a wonderfully keen gardener, and she became really famous when she started the Great British Bake Off. I helped Mary design her garden when she downsized from her much bigger garden to this one here in Henley, and it's lovely to come back and see how it's all bedding in. Mary, thank you so much for agreeing to do this. It's wonderful to have you on the podcast because you are my favourite chef, cook, and you're such a passionate gardener. And I think people don't really know that side of you, but they can learn a lot from you in the garden as well as in the kitchen. But first of all, Mary, I think back to our school days. And I think to when you were at Bath High School and you spent a lot of time outside Miss Blackburn, the headmistress's door, because you weren't the bright, you weren't the top pupil, you were a bit naughty. And now you must be the most famous pupil they ever had there.
Well, my school days, being outside Miss Blackburn's office, there was a green light above it. And when it flashed, you were supposed to go in. And I used to hate going in. It was always, why was I doing this? What was, you know? And I went back to school. I was invited back when I was doing a bit of filming. And I told the then headmistress, you see that light above your door? And she had never noticed it. And I said, well, find where the switch is and I can tell you all about it. Everybody says, the happiest days of your life, school. Certainly not the happiest days of my life. I've never been happier than I am now. In the garden, Bunny, that you helped me with so much. And it's we've been here now for years. And when it all comes to fruition, it is so exciting.
Oh, nothing like building a garden. It is wonderful, isn't it? But no, back to Miss Blackburn, because she was my headmistress too. But also, I don't know if you knew Helen Rowlandson, and she was the first sports commentator for Grandstand on the BBC, and she was in my year. And she too spent hours, as did I, outside that door with waiting for the green light to flash, and we were the naughtiest. So that's interesting, isn't it? We have a common thread.
We certainly have the common thread, and we have this love of gardening and also growing what we eat, which is so important.
And the other thing I think that makes me laugh about you then and now is your nickname then was Scruffy.
Yeah.
And I look at you now, Mary, and you look immaculate. You've got this fabulous sort of leopard print scarf, wonderful boots, amazing. You always look wonderful. So at what point did you go from Scruffy to having wonderful manicured hands, and you always look immaculate.
I think it's because now, if I'm on television, I'm an example of someone of my age, and I don't want to be scruffy, I want to be tidy, but always in something a size too big. I love comfortable clothes. Everything I buy, I have just that much bigger, so it swishes round and is comfortable. I hate tight clothes. I don't want a skirt tight over my bottom or trousers that cling too much to my legs. You know, I like freedom.
Yeah, no, I understand that totally, especially when you're gardening. But one thing, maybe none of us like Bath High School, but I do remember the garden there. I thought the garden was phenomenal because it seemed to be acres of undergrowth, big trees, woodland, lawns. It was so big, you could get lost in it, you could make dens in it.
Making dens, that was my best subject was break. And we used to make dens and we used to collect tall sticks and do sort of wigwams. And then when they'd cut the grass, we would put all hay around it and you would get inside. It was a den.
Yeah, and there were all sorts of out-of-bounds areas or semi-wild areas. And they couldn't have monitored anyone there. I mean, nowadays, I imagine with health and safety, that would not have been allowed because they were so extensive. You couldn't watch anyone there. They couldn't control you. So they would worry about you, presumably, because there are so many secret places in those wonderful gardens. And they were, I think, the nicest bit of the whole school, really.
Yes.
All developed now, I think, aren't they, with housing?
Yes, and I think the Hope House has been turned into flats.
Yeah. Bit sad, really, isn't it? But
less school.
Less school. And you had Miss Date, who taught you cookery or domestic science, was it?
Yes. Yeah. Miss Date was a wonderful teacher. She was knee-high to a grasshopper, and she knew how to inspire someone like me, who hated all the other lessons, but I really loved domestic science because it's something you can do. You follow good instructions and you get a good result. Can't go wrong. I was so fond of her, and I went to see her in her dotage in Monkton Coombe in her old people's home, and she still had that spark. And I know we sat alongside each other on a sofa and chatted, and she was just the same as she was at school. And, you know, she followed what I did, and she was a wonderful lady.
So you went to college to start with, and did she point you in the right direction and help you?
No, she didn't. I can remember my parents going to Miss Blackburn and saying, you know, we don't quite know what Mary should do. And Miss Blackburn said, I've no idea what she could look after children. And my father said, I think the children might suffer. but she said she does show some promise in cooking. So I went to do cooking at Bath College of Domestic Science, and I couldn't do the teaching course because I hadn't enough O-levels. Mm. You had to have a lot. Mm. But once I'd been to college, I then did a teaching course in City and Guilds 151, and because there is an art in teaching, and Miss Date certainly had it, and so I went over to Bristol on day release from the job I was in to do a teaching course. You see, television and radio and books are a wonderful place to teach. Mm. And, you know, it's a very big class when you cook on television. Mm. And that is very rewarding for me.
Mm. It's all about communication,
yes,
isn't it? And you're obviously brilliant at that. But then you spread your wings and you went to France and did the Cordon Bleu.
I went in my second job and I said to Mr. Sevink, I worked for a Dutch company, and I said I could do my job a lot better if I had more experience. And so he paid for the tuition and I paid to live in a hostel. Mm. And Rosemary Hume had been there, and she then came back and opened the Cordon Bleu in London. Mm. Katie Stewart had been there. It was sawdust on the floor in a room with no windows, in a basement, and very limited, full of Americans. And I have just been back to the Cordon Bleu in Paris a month ago, where my granddaughter, Abby, has been studying in her university vac for 3 months doing plant food. It's the second course they've done, and it was brilliant, absolutely excellent. Many chefs teaching them, silence when they're cooking. I was flabbergasted. It was an excellent course.
But the course you did?
Was very basic.
Oh, right.
But it looks terribly good on your CV. I'm a cook, definitely. I'm not a chef. I don't do all the lengthy things that chefs do. I'm a home cook because I want to encourage people to spread their wings a bit in the kitchen and cheat a little bit. Who wants to make puff pastry? And so my aim is to encourage people to enjoy cooking. And because there are other things to do other than cooking. You know, there's the garden to do, there's family. I have no wish to spend all day in the kitchen.
Mm. So sort of 70 books later, your day, Mary Berry, you've got a CBE, you're ambassador for the RHS, you're president of the National Garden Scheme. You're very keen and active in many fields, obviously. And your gardening, really, your last garden, where you were before here, was much more extensive, wasn't it? Rolling striped lawns, water. Did you feel, when you downsized to here, did you feel sad to leave that?
Not in the slightest. Very excited. And that's where I rang you and said, would you be kind enough to help me? And am I grateful? Because when I said to my husband, you know, we came here and it was very barren, there was no flowers in the garden, the tennis court that was just in front of the back of the house. He said, well, you've been gardening, you do it yourself, go on. I said, no, I need expert advice because I hadn't the vision. And so that's why I asked you. I didn't mind moving the garden at all because it was in fairly good nick and our gardener still remained to look after the next lot of people. They made a lot of alterations, but why not? And so I love our new garden and it's totally manageable. We have help Kevin one day a week and that is the highlight of my week because if I'm going off to work, I'm usually not going at 7:30 when he arrives. And together we say, what's going to happen this week? And invite them. And it has worked really, really well because we try to make it interesting. I like to find something to pick all the year round. And, I mean, even today, frost on the lawn. Last night I picked 2 Iris stylosa Mary Barnard, put them in a vase, and I felt that's fine. There's a very manky-looking bunch of flowers on the table here, just the last remaining things in the garden. And that's important to me. So I try to have something all the year round. Obviously, it's berries and things in the very midwinter, but I can't wait for the new snowdrops or the very beginning of the daffodils and narcissus and things coming through. It's always so exciting when something's just starting.
Yes, and there's always something new, isn't there? That's the thing about garden. Exactly. You never finish it. No. You can always tweak it, and that sort of keeps you into it.
And there's always room to put something else in if you move things over.
Yes, 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 yes. And you grow a bit here to cook, quite a bit, don't we? We did a little vegetable garden, a lovely greenhouse.
Yes.
And so how important is that to you? Obviously, with your larger veg garden before, presumably you grew more produce, but how important is growing your own?
I grow things that we eat and enjoy, and we built raised beds. And I remember saying to you, I want them in brick and I want to be able to sit on them. And so that's what we did. And it's very nice to have them with really good soil in so things grow well. And I can remember being in France a few years ago and having strawberries Garriott when we were on a walking holiday. And I've always remembered how good those were. So we grow one of them. It has just got Garriott strawberries in, which are excellent. They're not prolific, but they're enough, just enough for us. And we've taken a few runners this year to increase the amount, because I reckon we could put things closer together than everybody tells that you should. all our roses are much closer than you should put them together. Carrots grow extremely well because I think is it the flea beetle that comes if you have
fly.
Them low down? Because of our nut wall, they don't seem to come and take them. And that is a thing we keep putting them in. So we've always got them. We've got them right now still. Mm. We grow beetroot. Beetroot are expensive in the shop. Mm. And you get a little six in a bag. And we love beetroot. And I do pickled beetroot. It's always in the fridge. And I put it with vinegar and sugar and pepper and salt. And it's in a container. And Tom, our son, tree surgeon's son, he's always coming and he just eats it as though it's sort of fudge or something. He loves it. We all love it.
It's supremely good for you, isn't it? Healthy-wise, it's fantastic, apparently.
Well, yes, I'm not too sure, but I enjoy it. And we've got one with asparagus, which, again, is not prolific, but it's good. And then we have one with herbs and, of course, a little bit of spinach. I don't grow things like sprouts and cabbage and cauliflower because they need a bit of managing and I can buy it quite easily and I don't really have the space.
Yeah, they are more prone to pests, the brassicas, aren't they? And so I'm now putting mine in a cage because so aphids, pigeons, slugs, everything seems to go for the brassicas and they're in for such a long time.
Yes.
If you haven't got a lot of space, you need it for more.
But we grow beans. Climbing French beans, and last year I bought some climbing French bean seeds and didn't read the label that they were climbing because the year before I'd used just low ones.
Yeah.
And I put them in the raised bed and I just put the label in and whatever. And then I was in the greenhouse looking in and they're climbing. So what we did was just to put sticks in them and I could reach them. And they were so prolific.
Mm.
And we didn't have to stretch high to get them. And so we had climbing French beans that were, you know, really about 5'6" high. And it worked really well. And they went on and on. Because there's something about always picking them so that you always get the little ones. And they were absolutely delicious.
No, that is important to keep picking, isn't it?
Everything we like to grow, we have it when it's young.
Yeah.
And it's so exciting to go out there, you know, in the evening or with a drink. It's the veggies that I really enjoy. Another thing that I love are sweet peas. And we've put them in before Christmas this year because I gather that I'll get better sweet peas if I do that.
They do say, because the roots get down much further and they get established before the soil gets cold, really, because it takes quite a long time to chill the soil down. They are hard work, those sweet peas, aren't they, to keep deadheading and things like that. And
it's very important to deadhead.
Yeah.
Deadheading and feeding them. And but I do love sweet peas.
Oh.
And there's something about the smell, and they do go on, which is a good thing. I'm growing anthuriums for the first time because I bought some plugs. And they really go on and on and on, which is good. They don't flower too early. And the ones that I grew from plugs, we've just cut down. Because I notice as I drive along, you see established ones in people's gardens that come back every year. So I'm hoping that the early ones would come back.
Yeah.
There's always things to watch from here. There's a squirrel picking the leaves up from there, and he was doing it yesterday, and he goes up and down. You won't have a glance in a minute. He picks up a leaf from the conca tree, and he's gone up to the top, and he'll be down again in a minute. I'm not very fond of squirrels, but
no.
We won't get on that.
But it was interesting you were saying about you plant everything too close together, but I don't think there is an actual, you know, they do say in books very categorically X centimetres apart. But I remember at University of Bath, they did experiments with all different spacings. And the only disadvantage of putting things in too close together was that they needed more moisture if it was dry. So if you were watering, it really doesn't matter. So I think there's a lot of rubbish talked in horticulture. And they always try and make it very prescriptive. Whereas if you're baking a sponge cake, I agree, you need to get your proportions right. But I think in gardening, it's a lot more suck it and see, because your soul might be different to my soul, your conditions are different, you might like something slightly different form to me, and so I think there's a lot more room for experimentation. Or do you find when you take a recipe, you take it and you follow it initially, and then you adapt it and improve it yourself? Is it the same with cooking?
That's what I say to people. You know, do as I say first time round, and then if you want to adapt it, do. But keep strictly to the recipe. But when we put our roses in here, and we only have one rose in, which is Chandos Beauty, and we put it in brand new soil. We put them with root grow, and they've grown magnificently.
I was always impressed with your rose at Chandos Beauty. It is your very favourite rose, isn't it?
Oh, it's absolutely my favourite rose. I mean, the Mary Berry rose is half the parentage of it, but it isn't as good as Chandos Beauty. But it's very nearly there. But the Chandos Beauty, it has a very good smell. It has excellent foliage.
It's got a green, shinyish foliage, hasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It picks well, and we've had masses of them all through the summer, and we actually drip feed it from time to time in the night, which is the most economical way of watering. And it does because it's against a wall here, it does dry out, and it is worth it to me. And we do feed in the spring, and we feed after the just before the next flowering, because they flower twice. But they bring us great joy. Yeah. And we prune exceedingly hard.
And it's got blossoms on it now, hasn't it?
We were picking them, the last ones, and then we will cut them down, I suppose, to about 2'6", and then we'll cut them really hard down. I had a mentor when I was first married, a girlfriend's mother, Mum Block, and she said, you cut everything out the width of a pencil and you cut hard. And I always listen to her, and that's what we do, and that's what Kevin, our gardener, does.
So you keep everything that's thicker than a width of a pencil?
Yes, yes.
Wow.
But very, very short.
Very short, yes.
Very short.
Yeah. So I also think you look after her immaculately.
Because
check her for any black spot on everything,
Well,
don't you?
My husband deadheads every day.
Yes.
It's his little job. He does it regularly, and so I'm really grateful, because it does take time. But it's a lovely time of time on your own, time to think.
Mm.
I think it's very important to deadhead. But this is throughout the whole garden I deadhead, because it promotes growth.
Yes.
If you take all the flower heads off, whatever it is, whether it's a perennial or an annual, you just take the heads and more will come.
And with something like begonia and sort of leafy plants, their whole foliage develops. If you leave the flowers on begonia, the whole foliage looks a bit sad, but you cut the flowers off and the foliage comes into its own and looks fresh again. No, it has amazing powers to make plants recuperate deadheading, doesn't it? And it's, as you say, a lovely job to do.
And also even with things like dahlias, I might pick some for the house, but I just look at the plant and I snip all the ones that I'm not going to have, and they're just over, and more will come. All those little side buds will come if you snip them off.
Mm. No, it is definitely a very good tip. So shall we go out and have a wander around?
There you are, you see, that was smelled so
good. Ah! Yes, that lovely Daphne odora. That is a magical plant, isn't it?
It's a magical plant. Also, it's lovely to pick a bit, and you can smell. Mm. It's really strong.
It's quite difficult to get decent-sized specimens of that. You can only buy little sort of 2-litre plants often. But I've brought you this little myrtle, Mary. So do you know myrtle?
Myrtle is something a piece should be in every bride's bouquet, and it's a useful little plant to pick because, of course, it's evergreen.
Yes, and it goes about 3 metres high, and it's in all the royal bouquets.
Is it?
And it's because it's a symbol of love and
it
friendship.
It looks very healthy.
Yes.
And would I pinch the top out of that to make it spray?
You could do, yes. I would probably put it by a south-facing wall because it's a little bit tender. So if you've got a spare space anywhere,
we
or
will
a protected
find somewhere.
Space,
shall we put it on the table over there?
Yes. This looks immaculate, Mary. You look after it beautifully, don't you? It really does look loved and tended. And the tennis court, you just can't see it now.
No. Well, when you first came over to... We decided to make this terrace wider. We must have the Chandos Beauty roses. Interesting how they turn pink when they're at the very, very end of their life. But they're very creamy when you first come out. And the tennis court was literally, I suppose, about 30 feet away from the house, and it was predominant. And you suggested that we had you, which has been... brilliant. It had leaky hose on it, and we bought quite big plants because we're not going to be here forever, you know. 88 now. I mean, well, I wanted it up there by now. And then we also had a gate that you could see to go in, and you had the clever idea of putting yet another little hedge in front of it. So you sort of go behind it to open the gate, which was clever. And you also you suggested those lovely half moons of you each end, because we had all these rather nice seats. I'm a great one for seats in the garden, and we needed to put one at each end. It's all worked really, really well.
I think I was amazed that the people before put the tennis court there like that with no screening, because in any garden your eye goes to the biggest, ugliest thing. Yes. And that is the tennis court in this case, wasn't it? But now, by obliterating it, and that hedge has grown in sort of, they grow, it's almost like ribbon, you buy it by the metre, and they've developed a very special way of transplanting it. So it's grown miles of it in a field, and it's literally lifted the machine in a little basket, and I've hardly had any failures with it at all. It's amazingly good.
It's done very, very well, but it did need irrigation, not special soil, but irrigation, and it's we've used so much of it in the garden. It doesn't get any bugs, diseases, and it grows well here in Henley.
And you've got it, have you got it around your pool? Is that you, or is
that
Bob?
Recent. A very dear friend of mine died, Penny, and this is in her memory. And we put a little yew hedge around the outside, and it looked so ghastly when it was put in because it was so white. And now it's mellowed and it's lovely and it's just got water lilies in, that's all.
So there's a little raised pond about 400 high. And I'm interested because you're keeping the yew hedge obviously dwarf. And that people don't realise, they don't know what they can plant instead of box that gets the blight and the moth. But yew can be kept at that height forever.
Yes.
Just like a little box hedge. And people think they can't, but it does. It's brilliant.
And David Austin has got them round his roses in his garden.
Yeah,
and
for about 20 years he's had them at that height.
Exactly, because you can get so many hints and tips through going and looking at people's gardens. I mean, the National Garden Scheme, perfect to go and have a spy in everybody's garden. Take your friend, give her tea, which will be delicious. It's you all the time you pick up hints. Come back all enthusiastic in your own garden. You gave me a tip, which is so wise. Big pots, not little ones. So we got the biggest pot that we could find, and then before planting them, you suggested taking a circle out at the bottom so that they drain straight into the ground, and if it's something like a bay tree, it can even get its roots down in there, and it's worked very well for us. And having big pots means that you don't have to water them so often.
Well, I find with cutting the bases out, I don't water mine at all after the first 3 months or so. Their roots will go, if you keep on watering, their roots will stay in the top. But if you peter off the water, they will find it down below. And because the problem is, they will not last forever in a pot if you keep the bottom on. But if you take the bottom off, they will last, I find, forever.
Well, the spirals that you're looking at now...
beautiful spirals!
Well, they were for Thomas and Sarah's wedding, and that was 20 years ago. And they're regularly trimmed by Kevin, our lovely gardener. And they had a bad patch, because it's always worth looking, whoever's trained them. They put wires around them, and the wire at the top had was cutting in. And I suddenly saw it and took all the wire off, but they've recovered. They have a little bit of feed because they are box. We are aware very much of the box moth. Mm. We've got it here in Henley and we do spray for it. But we've got very little in the garden and I wouldn't advise anybody to have it ever again.
Oh, really? You're like box. That? Yeah.
No, not if you are in the area that we are. You've only got to look in people's gardens and see how they have lost their box.
But I was talking to someone in Rutland and they bought some box from a garden centre complete with a box moth. So even if it hasn't got to places like Northumberland and places, it will do soon because it moves around when they move the plants around, if not by other means. So, yeah, it is. And it's such a pain, isn't it? Such a pain. And you've got quite a bit of it.
Yes, but we watch it all the time and we do spray and we swap around. But as soon as we see it, we do it and keep our eye on it. Mm. And you suggested having yew balls, and it just softens it round the house, yew balls.
Yes.
And it works really well. We certainly have very severe frosts here. I was given a mimosa when we came here, and it was all right for 3 years, and it is... we've just got a new one because it died in the last year. It got the frost.
Yeah.
We've now covered it all up and it'll be all right. You learn.
You learn. But with mimosa, they grow so fast, don't they?
Yes, really fast.
Florist mimosa with a lovely yellow flower in very early spring, isn't it?
It is a sheer joy. And I love things that are a little bit unusual. And we've also, our peach trees, the RHS at Wisley, go and have a look at their peach trees. They've covered them up in a glass frame. Well, we've covered ours up in a perspex frame, which is on wheels, and it'll go in the garage in the summer.
And so, that's for peach leaf curl?
It's for frost.
Oh, and for frost.
Chill. But we can move it, and we can go and spray it for peach curl in February, I think we do.
Yes, or they cover them, I think, don't they, for peach leaf curl. They can do that.
Well, anyway, we are covered.
Mm. Yeah, lovely. I love your new wall around your tree, Mary. That looks stunning.
This is a conker tree, and it would just had sort of gravel around it and a few sets of, what do you call those sets?
Granite?
Granite sets, right.
Yes.
And I wanted to grow hostas high up so that they don't get eaten. So we had a dry stone waller who put it in the wall round with the top stone slightly out so the snails don't climb up. And Sienna hostas put all these hostas in, all different ones, and they are a sheer joy and they're not eaten by slugs and snails. And then now they're just dying down and the spring bulbs all the way round will bring joy from about February.
Mm. That's amazing because we have a lot of stone around us and the slugs and snails live in the stone walling. And I have to say, you'll be very shocked with this. I looked up from my bed the other morning and there was a snail on the ceiling. And this is in a first floor. I mean, how does it get
there? How do they do that? But they can't climb up the side here because there's a lip on the top one.
Maybe my snails are cleverer than your snails, but I think I know you've always loved hostas, and they are fabulous.
Well, they do look fabulous.
They are really lovely, aren't they? But I think the big-leaved ones are less subject to snail damage, aren't they, than the little ones?
Yes, and we've got a lot of big-leaved ones in there.
Yeah,
Summon Substance.
Really good ones. Yeah, very nice indeed. Can we have a look at your veg garden?
Okay.
Love your urns, Mary. I've always thought amazing, which you brought with you.
We did, yes. I remember my husband's boss died and left a little legacy. And I said to Paul, let's buy something from the garden. And we bought these two urns, which, when we arrived, looked huge. But, of course, they don't now because the hedge has grown up. And we're just going to make a little bit higher one end with a sweeping bit down.
Lovely, yeah.
A sort of shoulder in it. Yes. And again, I went to Roy Strong's garden and he had a shoulders on his yew. And I thought, It's good to copy these things. All these good things that you see just make a difference in a garden.
Yeah, absolutely. But those urns are probably sort of 1.4 metres high, very ornate, terracotta type.
I've seen them in France. I've seen them everywhere.
They're not many of them, though. They're not that common.
No, but I have seen quite a few.
Oh, once really? Once you spot them.
They're brand new. You know, there's nothing ancient about them. But because they're so dirty now, they look old.
They look wonderful. Yeah.
This little bed here is full of surprises. I love snowdrops. And the thick-leafed ones, is it, am I right in saying Williamsey or something?
Elwesia.
Yeah, see, I don't know.
Yes.
And they have really thick leaves, long stems, and I pick a few, and this is covered in them. I divided them up. Each year I divide them up and I'm gradually getting them round this tree. And also look at the little seedlings of primroses.
Oh, lovely. Yes. They're now saying, they used to say you're meant to move snowdrops in the green. They're now saying it's best in June when they go dormant. I've never tried this, but that's what they reckon. But things move all the time, don't they, in recommendations.
But Bunny, how do you know where they are if it's
in
June?
Must mark them, obviously, and state them, then go. That's the thing. You wouldn't remember, would you?
No. Well, we move ours in the green, and I keep an eye on them and maybe water them a bit. But they're not... Very soon they'll be coming up, but there's no sign now. So onto the
Are they mowing the lawn next door, do you think?
I don't know, but we can shout above those.
Yes. I love this little garden. It is like the perfect little kitchen garden, isn't it, I think? And it looks more bedded in now. When I last saw it, it was much more pristine, but you've got a bit of moss on the raised beds. It looks beautifully full, doesn't it?
Considering it's
just about December, you've still got lots of lovely French parsley, the butter yellow asparagus, you've got spinach, and you've got your carrots over there, and they'll overwinter, won't they? They'll stay in over winter if you
don't eat
them.
They will, but in fact, I think we will be eating them. And the dill, of course, we need to cut down.
Your dill for Gravellax. I remember you giving me the Gravellax recipe. I love Gravellax, yes.
And we've got lots of herbs in there, and the evergreen ones will go on. And I love Alstroemeria because it just has had the frost today. But it goes on and on and on. And I only grow the tall ones because it's much easier to arrange them. The short princess ones I don't like. And we actually put a frame. We made a frame out of old bamboo sticks and we put them on top of those poles. And they grow through them.
Oh, with the netting. You do the horizontal netting.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's
and
a brilliant way.
And so you can
way,
either buy
it?
Netting or, yes. to, you know, sort of a bit like pig wire only netting. But
yeah,
we
jute.
Do it with bamboo and they grow through.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they flop all over the place and we've just taken them off.
I did that with my broad beans this year with hazel wands, a sort of crisscross mesh over them horizontally. And it worked brilliantly. Really well indeed, yeah. No, it's looking lovely, Mary. And do you manage to get out in the garden? I know you work immensely hard, but do you manage to get out most weeks? Do you try and do a bit every day, even at this time of year?
No, absolutely not. I love coming out in the garden and seeing things. I'm a warm weather gardener. I don't garden very much in the winter. I admire, I try and find little things to pick and to cut, but I don't. That's why I'm very lucky to have Kevin, who comes all weathers once a week and does all those things that are necessary. Got Lily of the Valley along there. I don't know whether they'll grow.
Have you just put them in?
I put them in early this year.
They take a bit of time to get established, I find. Mine is now becoming rampant and I've been at it probably for 20 years.
Have you?
It does take time. But John Cushney always said you should push a stone over them. But I never did that. I thought it seemed too brutal, but that's what he used to recommend. Is a stone over the corms or when you plant them. But I'm not so sure. But they do. They will come slowly. Next time I come, I shall bring you a big clump. And I think that is probably the way.
Matthew Potash gave me some. And they're put all along, but they didn't. Obviously no sign of them now. I just hope they do.
No. Oh, Matthew Pottage is great, isn't he? From Wisley.
He is the greatest. inspiration, as indeed you are.
He's and I love the way he is so, doesn't do what everyone thinks you should do. Yeah. He's very, has his own views and does it his way. And it's usually brilliant. Now, he's a real breath of fresh air, isn't he?
Oh, he's lovely. Mm. And these are the...
strawberries.
And those
Garriott.
Are
yes. Yes. I don't think I've grown that one.
Well, yeah. It's very, very good.
Mm. Let's just pop in your greenhouse and see. So do you keep this heated or just frost-free?
No, not now. It's not. He may have put it in just now. I haven't been... Yes, it's just here.
Ah,
it's
you're
about five, I think.
Oh, your pelargoniums look wonderful, don't they? Really nice. And citrus and lemon verbena.
Absolutely, lemon verbena. And the lemon tree is... we also will put a bit of fleece over that. I'm very pleased with my lemon tree. But you can see it. It was a bit chilly last night. Can you see the...
Bit of a shock to it.
Bit of a shock to all of us, isn't it? And then I have the antirrhinums coming through. Well, you must think, why are they standing on upturned pots?
Mice.
And
yeah, definitely.
The mice really enjoy a nice nip of an antirrhinum. And
so you've got them. I do this with my broadbean. All the seeds they love. So you've got it so there's an overhang.
Yeah.
So the mice can't run up without... He'd have to run upside down on a shelf, as it were. And which he can't do. And that's the only way, I find, to keep mice off.
We've got little traps that they're rather crafty and pinch the cheese and don't. And there's my sweet peas coming along.
Oh, lovely, yes.
And we bring in all our pelargoniums, cut them right down, and they come back. These are paper white, ready for Christmas, and over there.
Gosh, those are very full, those paper whites, and right on the surface.
Well, that's what we do. And then amaryllis. I always do them three to a pot, but start off in one, and then I put three into a big pot.
Oh, so you've got one amaryllis in a litre pot, and then you're going to put three together in a big... That's a nice way to... And then you know you've got
the right
colours.
Oh, they look stunning. And then we put hazelnut sprigs to support them.
Yes.
And they look stunning.
The twirly hazel sticks or the straight?
No, just any ordinary stick that goes in there.
This greenhouse is absolutely beautiful inside, more beautiful than outside, because it's all in apple pie order. Absolutely burgeoning with lovely things, isn't it?
It's been sort of empty in the summer, but it's full of things now because we're saving them and hope they go through the winter.
Mm. And is that a cutting of a plumbago there?
It is. Your plumbago that you gave me is now 3 foot high and three to a pot and has given me such pleasure. Done by my dear neighbour, Anne Eastick, next door. She was very good and started off for me. And there are three just there, hopefully. And then we always do those daisies.
Oh, Marguerite.
Yes.
With the white. But, no, the plumbago is stunning. And mine survived that last winter, which was minus 10. And
I'm keeping mine in because I certainly don't want to lose it.
But they are much harder. It's been fascinating, Mary. Your Christmas is going to be wonderful with all these things ready to come inside, isn't it? These lovely bulbs. You made me think, I haven't done this yet. I'm on the back foot there.
Well, no, it was very, very cold last night. Mm. And, looking at my lemon tree, those little new shoots just there were not too happy, were they?
But they will manage it, won't they? They'll be fine. It's
so
nice and dry, as long as you keep them very dry.
But again, that is very pruned back.
Yeah.
I love pruning. Mm. And I always think of it as promoting growth. And if you can keep things a decent size that you can manage and nice and dense.
And then you can shape them as well, can't you? And with citrus, they can form wonderful shapes, can't they, as well? No, that's lovely.
That's been... it's okay. I'm pleased.
Oh, it's well. Thank you so much, Mary, for your time and showing us around. It's really beautiful. And I can see it's just going from strength to strength.
Well, if I hadn't had your guidance to begin you with, it wouldn't be as it is today.
Thank you.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.